You're listening to Lake Air,
WLAK 1260 AM Amory.
ABC and always News, streaming on the Civic Media
Supreme
app.
Supreme Court dropping its major decisions at the end of the week. One of them striking down President Biden's $430 billion federal student loan debt relief plan.
President Biden now coming up with a new debt relief plan under a different law, the Higher Education Act, which can compromise, waive, or release loans. The three-year pandemic pause on payments also comes to an end in October. The president says those borrowers will not face default for the first 12 months if they can't make the payments. A new repayment plan will cap monthly payments at 5% of income, which the White House says could save Americans $1,000 a year.
ABC's Melissa Aiden. Americans on the roads and in the air getting to their holiday destinations. The TSA expecting to screen 17.7 million people over the holiday weekend. This is ABC News. In France, hundreds more people arrested as violent protests over the killing of a 17-year-old boy of Algerian descent by police entered a fourth night Friday. Government officials say they deployed 45,000 police officers and urged parents to keep their children out of the riots. Entertainment industry strikes threatening Hollywood as the Actors Union threatens to join writers on the picket lines, where both groups are calling for better royalties in the new streaming world.
It is a big deal if the actors and the writers both go on strike. The last time it happened was six decades ago. The actors say they will do whatever it takes to get the deal that they want. And of course, it's not just writers who are impacted in all these cases. I mean, we're hearing stories about hair and makeup artists who are having to have yard sales the next few weeks because many are either out of work or they fear they're about to be.
ABC's Irene Shaw reporting in Los Angeles. More outdoor smoke lingering but dissipating in the east from those out-of-control Canadian wildfires. In a scathing report, the U.S. State Department saying the decisions of both President Donald Trump and President Joe Biden to end the U.S. military mission in Afghanistan had serious consequences for the viability of the Afghan government. This is ABC News.
Hey, this is Petty Pincher Bob, and I love a good rummage sale. If you love them too, you can list your Saturday rummage sale right here on this radio station. Your 15-second Saturday rummage sale ad runs Friday all day and Saturday morning for only $50 per week. If you would like to list your Saturday rummage sale, call us now, 715-629-9501. The deadline for each week is Wednesday at noon. Operators are standing by now. Please have a valid credit card ready to go. See ya!
News is brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Walks, a statewide team of personal injury lawyers getting you the justice you deserve. Call 855-954-1186 for a free consultation.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. A new study shows creative activities are a literal lifesaver for young people dealing with feelings of stress, depression, and anxiety. As Catherine Carley reports, the same goes for kids in marginalized groups.
The Adobe Foundation and National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI, found more than 60% of young people surveyed reported an improved sense of confidence through painting, writing, or any form of creative expression. NAMI's Frederick Miggins says improving access to creative activities could help turn the tide on a youth mental health crisis.
Creative expression is something that just about anyone can engage in person or online. This makes it one of the most accessible ways for people to invest in supporting their own mental well-being.
Megan says creative expression is not a substitute for professional mental health treatment, but rather an important tool in managing one's overall well-being and sense of purpose. The survey found younger people were more likely than the general population to say creative expression strengthened their sense of identity or belonging in a community. LGBTQ plus respondents were more likely than heterosexual respondents to say that creative activities improved their mental health and boosted their sense of community. Megan says at a time when so many LGBTQ plus youth feel targeted, online influencers are helping inspire young people to get creative themselves.
You know, at a time where a lot of the social media landscape can feel unwelcoming or antagonistic to people with queer identities, it's a great reminder that there's beauty and support out there.
Megan says trans kids in particular revealed even greater mental health benefits from creative expression. He says it's important for people struggling with mental illness to realize they're not alone and that creative activities can also be done with a family member or friend. I'm Catherine Carley.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
When it comes to achieving successful jury verdicts and settlements, one law firm stands out above the rest. Gingras Thompson & Walks, a $6.2 million settlement for a woman permanently paralyzed as a result of medical malpractice. $4.9 million to members of a family injured due to the negligence of a truck driver and his employer. Call Gingras Thompson & Walks today, 855-954-1186.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson & Walks, GTWLawyers.com.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute. Weekdays from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Everybody, welcome to the Cripescast. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. We are brought to you by Jolly Good Soda, and here's today's episode. Hey folks, welcome to the Cripescast. This week we are talking about electric cars in rural America. It's kind of an interesting thing watching the entire auto industry move over to electric, yet, you know, all of up north in Wisconsin is not quite there. And sort of looking at how we can make this thing that is becoming a reality in the rest of America a reality in places that may not necessarily be receptive to it or have the resources to handle it. And so my guest is Mary Jo Wheeler. She is the owner of Wheeler's Family Auto Group. And it is really an interesting conversation that we had. I don't think this was a conversation. Colleen Maraca, EP of the Cripescast, joins me in the studio, obviously. How you doing, Colleen?
Good. How are you? What were you going to say?
I was going to say, I don't think this is a podcast. I'm kind of like, you know, the guy in the relationship. If there's a problem, I'm like, all right, well, let's find a solution. You know, I'm not much for listening to.
That's things. Like most guys, but yeah.
I know. But I kind of sort of always feel that way with like environmental issues, kind of like let's find a solution with it, like jumping to try and find a solution in my brain, you know, without like fully understanding the problem. So I tried to kind of work against that, you know, because just because something isn't getting done doesn't necessarily mean, you know, there's a bad guy in that situation. Sometimes there is. Usually they're called lobbyists, but you know, see, there I go again. I just can't help myself.
Also too, I think after listening to this interview, it sounds like there's a lot of pieces to the puzzle that like, there isn't just one simple fix.
No.
So that's what it seemed like. It was like, well, this problem isn't being fixed because of this, this, and this. Like, it's not just a simple like pointing of a finger to one source.
Yeah, there's not just one thing. Exactly what you said. There's not just one thing. So that makes it complicated, but not undoable or not
impossible.
Impossible.
Yeah.
Oh, good, Charlie. You know words. But I think it does start. The cool thing that I like is that we are talking about accessibility for electric cars, kind of the future of America's automotive industry. Whether you're for or against them, that's kind of the future. It's kind of where it's going. And so then just understanding what the issues are and seeing how could we help make this easier. Because what we don't want to have happen, you know, whether you're for or against electric cars, is for rural Wisconsin or northern Wisconsin, places like that around the country, to miss out on tourism, to miss out on people traveling through. Like if they're going to travel through a place, you don't want them to pick a different route. And then, therefore, your town loses out on that like traveling industry or that tourism industry. Mm-hmm. Or like if someone needs a charge and they're going, you know, 50 miles outside of out of their way, you know, and it's like a Minneapolis. We don't want to just give the money to Minnesota, that tourism and travel dollars to Minnesota. That doesn't help us either. So, you know, that it's an economic issue.
What's wrong with Minnesota?
For starters, the Vikings. Also, 10,000 likes. Sorry, we have 15,000. Also, it's called casserole, not hot. I mean, I could go on and on and on.
I'm offended.
Yeah, the twins. We don't need to go down that road. Colleen, you know, we've been down that road. Right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to my conversation with Mary Jo Wheeler. You know, really, I would just love to have the opportunity to talk to you about how sort of the EV vehicle, release of those kind of around the country. I sort of see, you know, your dealership is maybe a microcosm for how small town America or smaller towns in America are sort of responding, and what maybe the challenges are, because you guys have really taken the lead and in fact been the first dealership that GM chose to release a certain type of charger. Isn't that correct?
Yeah. So it's been kind of an adventure. I feel kind of like a trailblazer with it. And I didn't realize I should have paid closer attention in school to the whole electrical grid stuff, electricity class. And I'm like, okay, when did I miss this in school? So it's been quite a learning curve. And I think we're all trying to figure it out, even as a nation, as a community, as a country. All the manufacturers are going in this direction. And the problem is we don't have the infrastructure. And I printed this fun little map. I don't know if you can see it.
Sure.
These are all the utility companies we have in the state of Wisconsin. I don't know who is in charge of trying to figure out all the different colors, but I wouldn't want that job. There's over 1,100 utility companies in the state of Wisconsin.
That looks like a psychedelic recreation of the state of Wisconsin, basically.
I know. It's crazy. So to get all these people to talk, so you have this law on the books in 1907 that regulates utilities in the state of Wisconsin. And, you know, we're kind of caught in the consumers demanding a product. And you have these utility companies that are saying, no, we regulate electricity. You can't resell electricity. So you have to figure out a way around that law. So it's okay, I'll charge for time or space and put these chargers in. GM has this great program and it's available to any dealer throughout the United States. It's called Dealer Community Charging. And I was one of the six dealers throughout the North America. I raised my hand to be the pilot dealer. It was kind of funny. I got a little bit of a hard time from the city administration in Marshfield. They're like, what's her deal? Like, why does she demand this like now? And government works slow, right? And I'm an entrepreneur. I'm like, no, let's go. Let's get this in. Nobody remembers who got second in the Super Bowl. So I was like, nope, I'm going to be the first one.
Yeah.
And so I was the first one to put them in the ground in North America back in November. So I was bumping up against frozen time, right? Like, sure. We're not going to dig in winter. We put 10 chargers in central Wisconsin and Marshfield. And now we're working with the other communities. And it's been great for Marshfield. It's great for these small towns. It's kind of like the old Route 66, right? Remember the Cars movie and like those car, that town is so sad because they don't have any visitors anymore. But this is an opportunity for dealers in those communities to get visitors back.
Right. Because, you know, if in Marshfield you're putting in these electric chargers, a lot of people are getting these cars. It's what all the automakers are making. If you are sort of that mm-hmm. island, that oasis of charge in central Wisconsin, that can make a city really pop.
Yeah.
You've said a bunch of things already, and I just want to make sure all of our listeners are sort of on point with, you know, who you are and exactly what we're talking about. So can you just give us first and foremost your quick background, and how you've already sort of been a trailblazer, and your mom has been a trailblazer in the automotive community in Wisconsin.
You remember my story?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. But I want our audience to know it as well.
So I grew up in the car industry. My dad was born in 28, and I'm not going to go back to when Jesus bought his sandals. My mom and him hooked up back in the 60s and got a car dealership in central Wisconsin. And I always wanted to sell cars, even my Barbies. Like, my brother would have his G.I. Joes out there, and I'd have my Barbie in her dream house, and I had my little car lot spread out, and I'd be selling my cars to my brother. And I've always loved the car industry. I didn't like, though, what car dealers were, and I was taught never to lie. So I always told people my dad sold steel because I wasn't lying, because it was steel. So I've been in the industry since knee high to a grasshopper, and I decided to be different. It's okay. There's a bunch of old white guys that are car dealers, and some of those guys are great people. But obviously the industry is changing, and I wanted to be a different dealer. So I became a dealer when I was 35 years old. I got my first store. My mom became one of the first dealers to be signed with General Motors. They actually didn't know how to sign her. There was 20 years difference between my mom and my dad. And so obviously dad passed away earlier, and mom ended up with the dealership. She'd worked there her whole life. And GM, when she took over, they're like, well, what do we do with her? She's a woman dealer. This is in the 80s. And they're like, well, we sign her like we do a guy. And I'm like, oh, okay. And actually my dad, when I went to Dealer Academy, he sent me there to find a husband. He's like, honey, you don't want anything to do with the car dealer, the car business. It's a rough business. It's tough. I'll send you to dealer school and you can find a nice husband. And I gave the boys a run for their money. I ran for class president. I became vice president, but I've always kind of been a little different that way. And I think it's fun. It's okay to be different, and it's okay to embrace an industry that maybe needs a little change and a little shaking up, right?
Yeah, well, absolutely. And speaking of sort of the shakeup on that, now we move into sort of what you have been doing with these electric vehicles. Now, I think generally speaking, and I'll speak just from my perspective, talking with people out there, there's kind of two schools of thought on electric vehicles. It's, why are we doing this? You know, it's not good, whatever. I'm going to stick with how it's been done. And then there's the mentality of, you know, climate change is a real thing. It's sort of our responsibility, not just to other people, but also ourselves and our kids, to do as much as we can for the environment, so we're not screwing them over in the future, and also screwing ourselves over if we're looking at how quick climate change is happening. And so we're going to move to electric, even though it may not be a perfect solution, step in the right direction. Let's make the most of it. So you kind of have those two schools of thought in Wisconsin, but within those two schools of thought, regardless of what school of thought you are, it's very hard to charge your car in Wisconsin if you're going on a road trip. And so that is because the infrastructure is set up in a very convoluted way. That was another point you brought up earlier, but I'd like to explore that and just let people know what all that's about before we kind of move forward to what you're doing to help fix it.
So you bought a Chevy Bolt, and we waited a long time for your Bolt to come in, right? And it's like, hey, can you deliver it to me up north? And I'm like, yeah, we'd love to. And then I'm like, oh, wait, like you're going to have a miserable time. Can you imagine handing a customer keys, like regardless of who the customer is, right? Like, here you go. Here's your wonderful new vehicle. By the way, it's going to take you 72 hours to get back home because there's no chargers you can charge at. And that's the experience the consumer has. So, you know, we have these EV vehicles. I think the manufacturers need to keep one foot in ICE right now, internal combustion engine, and one foot in EV. I think that's going to be a successful manufacturer, as they can balance and walk that walk. I think government needs to step back and just let the consumer pick what they want to do, what's best for them. Because if you're in northern Wisconsin, if you're in Park Falls, you're in Phillips, you're in Hayward, you're anywhere north of 29. We always have these lines in Wisconsin, right? Oh yeah, they're north of whatever, right? Yeah. You can't get from point A to point B easily if you have an EV vehicle. So we had a gentleman actually the other day, we put a charger in a level 3 fast charge down in Coloma. So just north of Portage. And it just got installed, just got on PlugShare app. And he's calling, and he calls the dealership, and he's like, is this legit working? And we're like, yeah, my husband's at the store. And he was dropping off a horse. So he had his Ford Lightning, and he had a horse trailer and a horse inside the trailer, and he was delivering it to Almond. And he was literally trying to make the decision whether he was going to have to drive over to Toma and go 100 miles out of his way to charge and then come back over on 21, I think it was. Or if we were open, he was able to scoot up there, charge, and then move on. He was very thankful. Some of the frustrations is like the reviews that we get online and stuff. Some of these people don't understand, like there's connections issues with these vehicles. It's not all the dealership's fault. It's not all the person that owns the charger. on the way back, he had a connection issue with his Ford Lightning. I'm not trying to bash Ford, but yeah, maybe I am. Just kidding. So he wasn't able to plug in on his way back, and he was a little upset about that. And it wasn't the charger, it was the vehicle connection with the computer. But you know, these are the things people are facing, and you can't, the infrastructure needs to be there. And we can argue all day long about the battery situation, you know, like where the minerals come from. GM is committed to recycling all those batteries. There's somebody out there a lot smarter than you and I that's figuring this problem out, but you take 5 gallons of diesel fuel. Okay. Let's just argue this point for a second. 5 gallons of diesel point. Cause I see on Facebook, like the memes of like the Tesla getting charged up with the diesel generator, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So take that same 5 gallons of a fossil fuel, right? And you put that in a truck, a Chevy Silverado 3/4 ton truck. Let's just for easy math say it gets 20 miles to a gallon, right?
Yeah.
So you're getting 100 miles out of that 5 gallons, right? Now you take that same diesel and you dump it into a generator and you charge your EV vehicle. How many miles can you get on your EV fully charged?
I feel like this is my dad asking me to do a math problem right now.
I know. That's so sad. I'm like, when did I step into this world? I hate math. I hate this whole thing. So, but you can get about 300 miles, you know, 200 to 300 miles, maybe 4, depends on the type of vehicle, on that same 5 gallons. So until the infrastructure is there, that's why you see some of these diesel generators pop up. You know, there's the demand charge issue, which is, oh my gosh, Bergstrom got hit, I think, with like a $2,000 bill for plugging in a vehicle for 20 minutes. And they were just trying to, the service advisor was just trying to be nice, right? They were like, oh, customer's coming to pick up their new Porsche. We want to make sure it's completely charged for them when they leave. And service advisor walks out there, plugs it in. Well, they spike demand charge. So for the listeners that are out there, demand charge, when you buy electricity, the utility that you buy it from is basing it on a really flat, even keel that your house, you know, runs only certain power. You only have certain things that are going on, and no different than with a business. Like, we know that this business only pulls this much power. So we base on a very even keel. Well, all of a sudden, if you have this huge draw off the grid in a short period of time, it spikes demand. So the utility company charges you a demand charge because they have to pull that money or that power off, and it creates additional bill that, unfortunately, as the business owner, you can't pass that on. It's just like the fault of the way our utilities are developed.
Let's touch on that. Yeah, again, what you're saying, though, with electric vehicles, though they're not perhaps a perfect solution, they're a step in the right direction. And then, so knowing that and setting that aside now, what then stands in the way of electric vehicles working right now? And one of those things, aside for just the infrastructure, is the relationship the utility companies have with charging electric vehicles. And that has to do with the laws that we have set up. And we'll just stay within the confines of Wisconsin right now. I'm sure there are similar things in other states. But since that's the one you know the best, let's stay with that. What is the law on the book in Wisconsin with respect to the electric companies and the grid that is not allowing you to kind of have your chargers up and give electricity away, essentially?
So if the listener wants to have a great read, there's like a 100-page document out there called Wisconsin Electrification Initiative. And in there, it talks about the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin. So in 1907, public utility law is the utility regulatory authority for the state. They regulate everything. So what they can charge, because back then they didn't want people reselling power, right? They didn't want you putting a solar panel up in your backyard and reselling it to your neighbor next door, right? In 1907, I mean, can you imagine that going on?
Well, yeah, I can, yeah.
So they said, no, we're going to regulate this. So a consumer or anyone that has power coming to their building, they can't resell it. So these charging stations that we're putting up, I have to charge for time or space. It was cute when I first called Marshfield Utilities and talked to Nick Kumm, and told him I was going to put a fast charger in. I'm like, hey, I'm going to put a 150 kW fast charger in my dealership. can I get a separate meter? Because then that separate meter, I can see what my, it's hard to calculate, right? So if somebody comes in and plugs in, it's a demand charge. If I don't have that separate meter, I don't know what to charge the consumer. And that's why it's kind of like the wild, wild west with what's out there. I get blasted once in a while online. It's interesting with PlugShare and some of these other apps. People are like, oh my gosh, it's $25 for an hour to charge at a fast charge. And it's like, well, first of all, you're taking power off of my building because the utility company will not allow me to put a meter in because utility companies have rules that your meters can't have to be so far apart. Like, obviously, like buildings, if they're so many yards away, they'll put a separate meter on maybe, but it's up to them. So I have no way of knowing what that charger is pulling off of my power bill. So then I can't break it down and be like, well, you came and plugged in for this hour. Now I know what to charge you. So like in Marshfield, so I put this fast charge in. I'm scared to death when the first person comes in and charges on it, which they have. And I'm like, okay, well, hopefully my brother doesn't yell at me about that utility bill. Because is the $25 really fair? At the end of the day, you know, I just want to recoup my costs. I'm not trying to get rich off the charger, but I can't spike demand. And if I spike demand, I get a surcharge for it from the utility company. So back
I'm sorry, if you spike demand, mm-hmm. like if you increase your rate, if so you spike like- demand, Okay. So you're only allowed a certain amount of electricity, you as a dealership.
As a only- business.
Yep. As a business.
Yep.
You're only allowed a certain amount of electricity. If you go beyond that, you spike demand and then your electricity is exponentially more.
Correct. Okay. Because I've reached another level. The utility companies have it set up kind of on levels. And like, let's say it's a manufacturing place or a steel place or whatever the business is that's running, the utility company looks at it and goes, okay, well, they are going to pull this much power off because they have this machine in there, this machine, you know, they add up all the kilowatts that are on all those machines and say, when everybody comes in at 8 o'clock and flips the light switch on, then that's the demand that you're pulling off the grid at that moment. And then everybody goes home at 5 o'clock and they shut it off. The demand goes down. So they know based on the type of business you are, what level you're at. Well, I think we're at a level 2 right now, if I remember correctly, from Nick Kum. And he's worried with that charger that it'll put us to the next rate level, which is a level 3, which is kind of like for manufacturers.
Okay. So that obviously spikes your electricity cost. Mm-hmm. I just want to... So... why don't the gas stations all have these electric chargers?
Great question. They're lobbying against some of them. Some of them are lobbying.
Which ones are lobbying against it?
I don't know for sure. I'd have to look into it, but the last budget session, they were trying to repeal the law from 1907 and it was fought against heavily. So you'd have to look into it, with who those, you know, lobbyists are down there that are working on both sides of the aisle to figure out who, which stations were, if it was Flying J, if it was Quick Trip, if it was co-ops or who it was, right? Like you see all these Quick Trips going up and you wonder, you know, like it takes me back to the days of the old gas station, right? The old gas station used to be at a dealership. You know, if you think back of the garage was the dealership. Standard Oil stations were actually dealerships. So are we literally going full circle and the dealerships now are going to be the place that you charge your car? Why aren't the gas stations putting these in?
Well, that's a very good question. If you look at the way American automobiles are going right now, EV seems to be not just a trend. I don't think so. Do you think it's just a trend?
No, I think they're tired. The manufacturer, right? Like you have this political war that goes on, like, okay, we have 4 years of this guy, 4 years of this guy, 4 years of this gal, 4 years of this guy, whatever. Haven't had a gal yet. Really wish we have a gal. But I think they're tired of the back and forth. And then the feds keep changing the rules with fuel economy standards, right? So you have that plays into it. You have to meet a certain footprint as a manufacturer. And I think they're just done. Like, hey, we need to sell heavy trucks. Like GM's like, hey, our bread and butter are these heavy trucks for these farmers and these people that need to make the food that gets put on our table, right? But we need to produce these, but they don't meet the standard that the federal government requires. So in order to meet that standard, we need to produce X number of EV vehicles and sell X number of EV vehicles because they get a credit then to offset that 3/4 ton truck that they sold. So the government has kind of made it very convoluted that if you're a manufacturer, whether you're Toyota, Nissan, Ford, GM, whoever, like you, if you want to sell a truck, you have to sell and produce so many EV vehicles. It's not going away. It's here to stay.
With that it's not going away. I'm sorry, did I just cut you off?
No, you're good. You're good.
Well, with that idea that it's here to stay, I don't understand why these filling stations wouldn't want to get ahead of the curb. If they're not going to stop it, why are they lobbying against it? That seems like a stupid business decision. And I'm not a business guy, but it seems very stupid to me at initial sniff.
Don't you think that gas has controlled a lot of things? I mean, you go back to Standard Oil back in the day. I mean, he ruled roost when he figured out the byproduct of kerosene was gasoline. And then the internal combustion engine came out and he was making bank on selling gasoline and putting stations up. I mean, there has to be a lot of power, I think, behind that to kind of push back and say, we don't want these EVs, right? But then to me, the power shift needs to happen of we need to develop our infrastructure in this country, the electrical grid, which we've talked about for years. I mean, we haven't had the effects here in Wisconsin, but we all know people in California that have had brownouts and blackouts. I mean, that sucks, right?
Well, and that's kind of one of the things that I'm just sitting here trying to put these pieces of the puzzle together. Yeah. And you see gas stations, according, you know, to you, lobbying against having these EV chargers at the gas stations, or lobbying against changing that law so EV chargers essentially wouldn't be able to go in there.
Right.
You also have these rolling blackouts in California. Is it even possible, given our infrastructure, to have all these EV vehicles on the road? I'm trying to find a solution. I'm sure one doesn't fully exist. And to push, is it right to push people? I feel like there should be an option for the gas and the EV right now, but to just not even have the EV option seems a little disingenuous from people. And it seems like we're going to be watching like another Who Killed the Electric Car documentary in, you know, 10 years. I don't know that, you know what, I'll save my judgments for all of this, but I it's just very curious to me that there seems to be a coordinated pushback on the EV vehicles, making it as difficult as possible, and therefore forcing it to fail. You know, maybe that's too cynical, but that it seems like there's some of that that's going on. Would you agree or would you disagree?
I agree. And I think I would love to sit down and talk to Elon Musk about this whole thing, because he has developed, you know, the infrastructure was the issue, right? He went out there, I think 15 years ago, and everybody thought he was nuts, right? Everybody was like, you're freaking crazy. You're putting these charging stations. I remember when the charging stations went in down by that Culver's in Toma. And I was like, oh my God, we have Tesla charging stations down in Toma. Now, mind you, like I'm a dealer, right? So I'm a little like, oh God, with Elon, like, please don't get rid of me as a dealer, because his model is different. He doesn't want dealers. He's kind of trying to change that model. But I mean, to think back then that he came out and said, if I'm going to sell this product, right, I need to have these charging stations out there. I heard, and I haven't confirmed this, that he offered the federal government to basically buy his charging network to make it so that people can, like you, could go to a charging station at a Tesla and pull down their power. So he would be the guy. That's why I say, like, keep government out of it. Keep some of these bureaucrats out of it. there's smart people out there that can figure this out. How do you get 1,100 people that all got a piece of the pie, right? Like somebody's business, like somebody's livelihood, food on the table is dependent on how the system was set up back in 1907. Now, it's okay to change. We just need to figure that out, right?
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. Beginning at 6, Up North News. Then at 8, Stu Daniels. On Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. The Supreme Court dropping its major decisions at the end of the week, one of them striking down President Biden's $430 billion federal student loan debt relief plan.
President Biden now coming up with a new debt relief plan under a different law, the Higher Education Act, which can compromise, waive, or release loans. The three-year pandemic pause on payments also comes to an end in October. The president says those borrowers will not face default for the first 12 months if they can't make the payments. A new repayment plan will cap monthly payments at 5% of income, which the White House says could save Americans $1,000 a year.
ABC's Melissa Aiden. Americans on the roads and in the air getting to their holiday destinations. The TSA expecting to screen 17.7 million people over the holiday weekend. In France, fires erupting overnight. It was the third night of protests after the deadly police shooting of a teenager. President Macron calling the shooting of the teenager inexcusable. This is ABC News.
News is brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Walks, a statewide team of personal injury lawyers getting you the justice you deserve. Call 855-954-1186 for a free consultation. The law firm of Gingras Thompson & Walks has a track record of making life-changing, positive differences for their clients. $5.25 million to a woman who suffered brain injuries and her husband passed away when struck by a drunk driver. $1 million to three different individuals injured by drunk drivers. $1 million settlement to a man injured in a motorcycle accident. Call Gingras Thompson & Walks, 855-954-1186. When it comes to achieving successful jury verdicts and settlements, one law firm stands out above the rest. Gingras Thompson & Walks, a $6.2 million settlement for a woman permanently paralyzed as a result of medical malpractice. $4.9 million to members of a family injured due to the negligence of a truck driver and his employer. Call Gingras Thompson & Walks today, 855-954-1186. All in to win, Gingras Thompson & Walks,
GTWLawyers.com. Larry, it's your mom. Did you know the Civic Media Network covers the whole state of Wisconsin? They can help your business get the word out, whether you want to reach a smidge of folks or just want the whole kit and caboodle. Call 608-819-8255. Okay then, bye.
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup.
That's awesome.
Beginning at 6, Up North News. Then at 8, Stu Daniels. At 10, As Goes Wisconsin. Then at noon, Civic Media Network News. 12:15, Town Call. 1 p.m., The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Tom Mankrut. Then at 6, The Maggie Dawn Show. This summer, things are heating up on Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
Don't let biased algorithms, or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes, don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Folks, you're listening to the Cripes Cast, and here is my conversation with comedian and writer Rosebud Baker. I kind of want to just jump into the beginning of your sort of comedy, like, deal. And do you remember the first joke you ever told?
I remember the first joke I told that worked.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, you know,
it was like a joke. I mean, every comic has like, every female comic has like a Disney joke, like a Disney princess joke when they first start.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but it's just like something that happens. Or it did then. And so my take on it was that I never saw like a Disney princess that knew that could save herself. It was always just like a guy that came to save her.
Yeah.
And I thought I really would like to see one Disney princess save herself, where like if Snow White woke up in a house full of dwarves, she'd be like, oh, I think I have a drinking problem.
And that's the end. That's the end. Movie. Yeah.
That was the whole. Yeah. She's like, oh, I got to go to a meeting.
Yeah, that's great. You know? Yeah.
That was like the first joke that I told that kind of worked. And I thought, OK, that'll make it into something. And it just, I don't think it ever did.
But it got you, there's like one joke, one line that gets you your hour. So it gives you enough confidence. It gets you addicted to it. Was that kind of it that got you like, you're like, I can do this?
Yeah. I mean, I never really thought I could do it. I never really, I still am in this place where I'm like, I can't do this. Okay. But I don't know if that's ever going to go away, but it feels like, you know, it was enough to be like, this is okay. This is a solid 5 minutes. That's an actual joke.
Yeah.
I know that's a joke. That feels like a joke. It sounds like a joke. It has the rhythm of a joke. And that's where I'll go from there. You know, if everything feels like a joke, then at least there's like that. I can kind of lean on that rhythm.
Yeah.
Of like, there's a setup, there's a punchline. So if you don't laugh, fine, but I did my homework.
Right.
You know, and now I'm kind of like, okay, let me just see what happens if I just say this. And if it gets a laugh, it's a joke. And if it doesn't, I can rework it or somehow, but I don't care as much about people coming to see my show and going, wow, what clever, you know, I don't care that much anymore.
Clever is, that's a tough word, I think, for a comedian to hear, because it's like, I see what you did there and it's somewhat amusing, but not enough for me to laugh at it, you know?
Right. Yeah. I just want to go on and have people walk away from the show being like, man, I want to hang out with her. You know, I don't want to hang out with them, but I want them to feel like they could hang out with me.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. So you before comedy, you were doing acting. And so how did you make sort of that transition from acting to stand-up comedy?
Well, I was like, I wanted to be an actor. And it was kind of one of those things where like, I grew up and my parents were like, oh, she's going to be a performer. She's going to be an actor. And I just kind of like heard what people were saying. And I just sort of followed that direction and thought, okay, well, this is what I'm good at. And this is what I'll do. And, you know, went to school for acting, moved to New York, did some off-Broadway shows. And I thought, man, this is really a lot of work for not a lot of like actual work. Like you're doing a lot of like classes and prepping and pictures and all this. I'm like, what job am I preparing myself for? I'm never auditioning. I mean, this is like a hilarious delusion that I'm in.
Yeah.
And nothing is happening. I mean, I'm not acting. I'm just preparing to act. That's like what my whole job seems to be. And the whole thing just seems so deeply sad. And I thought, I'm just not going to do this anymore. Uh-huh. And I took a year off and I said, I'll either be like a dog trainer or a social worker or something like that. And I remember talking to my friend who was in my acting class and who was a comic, Michael Blaustein. So Mike and I, we've known each other for like, I don't even know now. It's got to be like 14 years or something. So we were acting, we were scene partners at the Esper Studio. And we've known each other since then. And I called him up and I was like, I'm done. I don't really want to be an actor. And he was like, he was in the car on the way to something. And he was like, why don't you just try doing stand up? Like, what? You're always like coming to hang out with me while I'm barking. You're always giving, you're always like telling me joke ideas that you have, and they're, I don't want to hear them anymore. And he goes, why don't you just try doing it just because it's fun? And I thought, all right, yeah, I guess I could. And I think I put it off for like another 8 months and tried it, and then immediately got hooked, like in a way that was like, I never cared about acting that much. I never was like, and I honestly think at the time I was a better actor than I was comedian, but I never cared that much about acting. I thought, oh, this is the thing that I was supposed to be doing. This is the thing that like my whole life was telling me, this is where you belong, because you don't belong anywhere else. Down to like my sleep patterns, like everything was just set up perfectly to be like, this is the thing that you're supposed to do. And I loved writing. I loved performing. I never liked auditioning. I never liked performing other people's words that much.
Yeah.
And I just didn't have that obsession, you know?
Right.
But with comedy, it was like, I was like a drug.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also nice that, I mean, I did like the acting thing in LA, or tried to. I was never good at it. Most of the time I was doing it, most of the time was spent in the car going somewhere bomb an audition, you know? But there's something about comedy that just puts you in the driver's seat of everything, and you can do it at any age, and it's because it's whatever your truth is at the moment. That's kind of like, what you want to hear. Is that kind of like what got you going with it, or was there some other aspect?
I don't quite know what it was. I can't like put a finger on it. All I know is like, I just felt this kind of like, it wasn't even really conscious. Because I didn't really think that anything would come of it. I just thought, this is so fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like sober at the time. I'd been sober for like a while when I started comedy. And I just thought, I haven't wanted to do something every night like this since I quit drinking. Where it was like, I can't wait, you know?
Yeah.
And it became my whole life. Like, I've missed family reunions. I've missed graduations. I've missed like babies being born, and I don't even regret it. Like, that's what's so crazy. And I'm on the road right now, which is like the place that you regret it.
Yeah. Right.
You know, right. When you're on the road and you're alone and you're like in this, I mean, this is the saddest hotel.
You're right in front of the door.
It's deeply sad.
It actually looks kind of hip. If it were on Hotels Tonight, I think they'd describe it as hip. Oh, it gets more sad the more you move the camera. Okay.
Yeah. It's
that was a mirror I was looking at. Now, right, that looks like a deep hallway. So it looked like, but now I'm realizing that's a mirror, not a really thin doorway.
Yeah. I'm in one sad room.
Wow. Yeah. That's a little box you're sleeping in there. Jeez. Well,
it's so bad.
Yeah, I would miss home at that hotel. That hotel should be called Missing Home. Missing Home Suites.
I'm like, thank God we're selling out this weekend, because if it was, imagine bad ticket sales on top of this room.
Oh no,
that's
no
a recipe for suicide right there.
That's when you want to be on the first floor, just in case you give it a go.
Just for safety's sake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does your family like your show? Does your family like your comedy? Do they have any thoughts at all? Cause you talk about them a lot in your special. You give them a little crap, which is the way all families do, just not always on stage in front of a bunch of people, you know?
Yeah. It's not that I don't care. It's just like, it's none of my, if I were to stop and think about that, it would mess with my writing. It would mess with my ability to express myself on stage. And I feel like by the time I get to recording a special, I've really gone through every scenario of like, is this an attack on this person, or is this a joke about this? And I try to keep the joke about, I don't ever want to joke about someone else that wasn't where like they haven't heard it or they haven't like been briefed or they're not aware. I never wanted to take somebody by surprise or to hurt them, but like people get hurt by jokes. Like it happens all the time where they're like, that's the line for me. And you go like, well, that's my closer. So there's been fights where I'm like, look, if I was a songwriter and I wrote a song about you, you know, you'd probably find a way to be like, this is, you know, I look at what she did for me, you know, but jokes for some reason they're a little more disrespectful.
A little more direct. Yeah.
A little more direct.
Song, you can kind of shroud it in, you know, some flowery language. That doesn't work as a punchline. That's too clever, you know?
Yeah, I feel, and this is really something that I'm thinking about a lot, especially now that I'm pregnant, is like, you come into the world and you got a family and you're not necessarily, you might come from them, but that's not who you are. And your job on the planet is yours. And it has nothing to do with your family. And you kind of have to divorce yourself from them in order to become the person that you are supposed to be. And that doesn't mean that you lose respect for them or that you know, but when people go like, what does your family think? I go like, it's none of my business. It's not that I don't care, but it's none of my business. I can't think about that.
Yeah. And so it's also kind of like, you know, it doesn't change your truth on it, you know? And so that is kind of, I mean, that's the good thing about comedy, but also the hard thing is, you know, it's asking you to be at its best. It's asking you to be very honest and it's hard to do that. Oh, we exhausted the battery. Oh geez. We're just replacing a battery. Sorry for that.
That's totally fine.
What hotel is that again?
It's called the Freehand. I'm starting to realize it's like half hostel. But yeah, half hostel, half hotel.
Woof.
There's a lot of people writing screenplays downstairs, and I know that they're not screenwriters because there's a strike. So
Yeah. They would never work.
Right.
During that strike. How's the strike affecting you, by the way?
We had to end the season a little early, which was a bummer.
Yeah.
Because we were just on such a roll this season.
Yeah.
And I think everybody was feeling so good and nobody really wanted a strike because when you're there, you're like, well, we're getting residuals and everything's cool. But then you think about the jobs that you held before you came to SNL and how they really didn't pay a livable wage. Like I had to, like, I think I wrote for 3 shows in a year and I never got, I was like, I can't even live off of this.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I'm glad that it's happening. We would be on spring break anyway. Mm-hmm. So we're just kind of like waiting it out. And then by the time it's over, I'll have a kid. And it's like, there's so much stuff happening that I'm kind of like, it's good that they're doing it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I think it's really necessary.
Yeah. Do you think anything will come of it?
I hope so. I mean, I don't see us ending the strike until they meet our demands. So I hope so.
Yeah. I hope so too. It's kind of, it's a wild way that whole economy works, but we'll see. TBD.
Yeah.
Before wrapping up, I know you're obviously having a child. You were a 90s baby, basically, right? That's kind of when you came up. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of your favorite things about the 90s that you wish your child could grow up with? And what are your least favorite? And like, do you wish they had Dunkin' yo-yos, you know?
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah. I remember like the ads that we had because she's not going to have advertisements.
Oh yeah. Like the commercials for like Capri Sun or something.
Yeah. The commercials for kids was like in the 90s were like so wild. They were just like you just be like, I have to have it. Like the way that they would make you want like a slap bracelet.
Right.
you know?
Slap bracelets.
Those little peace signs that you could tie your t-shirt through. Do you remember those?
I don't even know those.
They were like circles. They were like plastic neon circles with like a line through them. Yeah. And so that you wouldn't have to tie your t-shirt into a knot to make it a crop top.
Oh.
You could sort of work it through like a belt loop.
Got it.
You kind of had like a belt loop for your t-shirt with a matching scrunchie. And like, I loved all of the neon, like manic accessories of the 90s.
Yeah.
That my kid's not going to have. Like I'm like, that's so, even just looking at like the stuff to decorate a baby nursery, it's all just like neutrals. I'm just like, why is everything so neutral? It's so boring. Like in the 90s, people were decorating their houses like hot pink. It was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were like, it was nuts.
You could smell the chemicals in that paint when you walked in the room, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It was something special.
Airbrushing, like the airbrush paint, all of that, like those t-shirts, you know, and we just put them on fresh. We'd just be like, you know, like putting on a t-shirt that we just got our name airbrushed onto and just fully getting, just blasting ourselves with environmental toxins.
I know,
you know,
that was the best. Yeah. That's when the ozone was depleting.
Yeah.
Did you have a Tamagotchi?
I didn't have a Tamagotchi. My sisters had Tamagotchis. Okay. I never had any interest in caring for anything else.
Okay, that's good. It's good to know about you as a human being about to create. Yeah, another.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Nice. That's good to know. Good to know. You might want to, you know, call your sisters for how they took care of that Tamagotchi. Maybe they have some insight. You know.
Well, to be fair, I have. Listen, I was like, that's the saddest pet I've ever heard of. Like, we have actual pets in the house that you can pet, and they'll like love you back, and that's
right.
You're just lonely. That's like really lonely.
No, I mean, you were that's the comedian in you bringing the truth out in a very innocent child's toy. Yeah, that's perfect. Did you have a TV show that you liked, a cartoon, your favorite 90s TV show?
I mean, I always loved Saved by the Bell.
Yeah.
I loved Saved by the Bell. I loved Friends, obviously. Oh, wow. I loved Full House, you know.
What was your favorite Full House episode? I was a huge I saw, I think, every episode. So
I can't pick a favorite episode of Full House. I really can't, because it's too much of like a deep, deep memory.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
But like Saved by the Bell, I definitely had, like, there was like the one where Jesse got hooked on caffeine pills.
I'm so excited.
Yes, yes.
That one was great.
I loved that episode. And she's I'm so scared. You know, I was like, that's beautiful.
Yeah,
you know, meanwhile, they were getting the entire country hooked on Ritalin.
I know, like, at the exact same time.
Yeah, it's like, okay.
That was perfect. That was like, that was a great Full House episode. I'm sorry, Saved by the Bell. Full House, I guess, would have been when Uncle Jesse was trying to jump the houses with his motorcycle, and then he got convinced not to. Do you remember that one?
I don't remember that one.
Oh, you're going to have to YouTube that. Yeah. Do that today. Yeah.
That sounds classic. That sounds pretty classic. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's all the time we have for now. But if you want to listen to the full episode of the Cripes Cast, check us out wherever you get your podcasts. All right, folks, that's it for this week's Cripes Cast. Huge thanks to Rosebud Baker. Make sure you follow her at Rosebud Baker on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, at Rosebud Baker NYC on Facebook. And of course, tour dates, rosebudbaker.com. And Colleen, where can they follow us for all the Cripes Cast stuff?
You can follow the Cripes Cast at Cripes Cast on all social media platforms. If you want to see the video version of the podcast, you can either see it on Spotify, YouTube, or Facebook. Again, patreon.com/CharlieBarons to see behind the scenes footage, early notice of tour dates, because tour is coming up.
Yeah, I'm so stressed. Our business is growing. We've got people all over now.
Ooma.
What is that? Meditation?
I'm recommending the Ooma Cloud Phone System with auto attendant and more than 50 features.
Ooma?
Yep, switching to Ooma is a cinch. Just $24.95 per month per user, plus taxes and fees.
Ooh. Uma.
Now you're feeling it. Find Small Business Calm at uma.com/radio. That's OOMA.com/radio.
With one call, the Civic Media Network of stations can deliver your business's message to the entire state of Wisconsin.
Or your hometown.
Marketing plans that work for your business. One call can do it all. Civic Media, 608-819-8255.